are listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.
Well, another week with you, Paul.
Yes,
another slice of heaven.
Really?
Yeah,
really.
I think a week
with you, Michael's just like a tiny hug from Jesus. It really is.
Wow.
It's a tiny hug from Jesus.
Could have been a big hug from a tiny Jesus.
Which gives you an idea how pathetic my life is.
Yes.
Yes. If I actually...
It's come to that.
Yes, exactly.
I'm so sorry.
Exactly.
Well, you know what, Paul? We'd like to thank our sponsor, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. And to learn more about Breakdown Express, ladies and gentlemen, simply visit them at BreakdownExpress.com.
Breakdown Services.
BreakdownExpress.com. Yes, I'm so sorry.
BreakdownExpress.com, but it's Breakdown Services.
You are so right.
Just do it quickly.
You had to point that out.
I'm sorry. We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, or I'm sorry, Performing Arts Express.
Oh,
there you go. One of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to our live arts calendar.
Don't you know?
Yes.
It's Express spinoff day, is it?
Yes.
That's
okay,
what
got
it.
You're here. Jiffy Express.
Jiffy Express.
Yes, yes.
And then what would it be? What?
Federal. Express.
Yes. There you go.
Yes.
UP Lube?
Yeah,
UPS Lube?
Yeah.
What? I don't
nice.
Know.
I'm just, I think we should just skip this whole track we're heading on.
Oh, my goodness. You know, today, ladies and gentlemen, we have two guests that are joining us, one in studio and one on the telephone, joining us later in the hour. He's back in his native Los Angeles after 10 years in New York, or perhaps a little bit longer. I'm not sure, but extensive national touring work that he did and has done, and even a stop on Broadway with Kiss of the Spider Woman. But today, he is wearing his director's hat and here to talk about a new take on the classic Funny Thing, A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum. Welcome, Joshua Finkel.
Hey, guys. Oh.
We don't spare any expense here.
Really?
Wait for your applause?
Well, I and then it was so abrupt, I didn't even have a chance to say hello.
Look, you brought them. You tell them what to do. Okay?
It's out of our hands.
Okay. And a few minutes, we'll also chat via the electric telephone with an old friend of State of the Arts. He usually joins us in studio, but he is unable to do so today as he is officially the second hardest working man in show business.
Wait a minute. What do you mean the second hardest working man?
He's the second hardest working man.
Who's the first?
The first, well, unfortunately for us, it's Justin Bieber.
Oh.
But he is here to talk about
budding.
Yes, exactly. Unfortunately for that, it's Justin Bieber.
Okay.
Nice.
But he is actually here to talk about a phenomenal production of a play called Fraternity.
Did you say phenomenal?
Phenomenal.
Oh, phenomenal.
Look,
okay.
You can't get the sponsor's name right. You're going to talk to me about my diction?
You're doing very well.
Believe
it's
me, I understand
uppers.
Everything
it's
they're talking
It's my uppers, Michael. I need more polygrip.
You
my
can't
uppers
buy them through the mail anymore.
Anyway,
okay.
It's a production of Fraternity being presented by Ebony Repertory Theater. Tucker Smallwood will join us in just a few minutes. Always great to have Tucker on the show.
Such a distinguished actor he is.
Yes, he is. But before we get to Tucker, who we'll connect telephonically shortly,
yes.
Michael, how was your week?
You know, it was good, getting ready for summer, and you know what, I was a hilarious little thing, I mean, it is to me, I hope it is to you, I've been going, shopping, getting summer stuff, or lighter clothes, whatever, and I've been looking at self-tanning lotions, right, because
yes.
I think it's not great to lay out in the sun, I get a little bored, frankly, so
okay.
Maybe I can combine the two, shorter time out in the sun, and a self-tanning thing doing its thing. I watched this television series, King of Queens, right?
King of Queens, yeah.
Yeah, yes. Which I had never watched the first
with
time.
With Kevin James and Leah Remini?
Yeah. And the two of them, truly. I mean, it's a brilliantly written.
Oh, yeah,
it's great.
It's like the current Honeymooners. It's
right.
Like a modern Honeymooners.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And there was an episode, and this is right after I'd come back from Macy's or something, and Lou Ferrigno plays a character who is their neighbor across the street.
He plays himself. Yeah.
Yes, and he comes over and asks her to do something for her, or she asks him to do something for her. Yeah. As would always be the case. And he says, no problem, Gary, I will, but I need you to do something for me. And she says, well, what's that, Lou? And he said, can you apply this self-tanning lotion to me? And she went, oh, no problem. She was kind of excited, actually. So anyhow.
Because he's still built. I mean,
And as the episode continues,
yes.
She and Kevin James, you know, sees her on wherever he's seeing her. He sees her on the street, actually, in one situation, and she is so dark. God. He says, "What the hell has happened to you?" And it's that self-tanning thing, isn't it? It was Lou. And she, "How many coats do you have on?" Oh, and she says, "Oh, 1, 2, 10, 12." I'm not sure. She looks like
an Oompa Joe's, like an Oompa Loompa.
Oh my God!
Like an Oompa, like that orange hue.
The orange thing. Yeah, that's where you have to be careful of the orange.
Yeah.
No, they did a
hilarious.
I didn't. I've never done the tanning thing.
Yeah.
But because I put the sunblock on, and that's something you have to watch when you're Italian and you pass 40.
Yeah.
Because you just become, you know, various stages of the werewolf getting closer to midnight.
Yes,
I've
of
become
course.
A chia pet, basically. So I can't. The whole thing with me is putting sunblock on my back is like trying to get peanut butter out of a shag carpet. But that's a whole other thing. Anyway,
let's move.
What a visual.
Yes.
Let's move away from that. Let's move away from that.
And yes.
Let's introduce our first guest, Mr. Tucker Smallwood. Michael, would you give him
absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely. 3 weeks, ladies and gentlemen, after Dr. Martin Luther King's seminal "I Have a Dream" speech, a bomb destroyed an Alabama church, killing 4 young girls and shattering the dream that had inspired so many. Set in a private club in 1987, Jeff Stetson's fraternity explores the journey of 7 successful black community leaders whose lives were forever affected by that tragedy. It examines what happens to those that seek power, privilege, and inclusion while abandoning the sacrifices that made their success possible. With us today is an accomplished actor and writer who joins a stellar cast in Fraternity, presented by Ebony Theater Repertory Company, a show that Variety calls a timely, significant achievement. Please welcome Tucker Smallwood.
Tucker. Hey. Tucker, are you there?
Well, I am indeed, and those are the sounds of one hand clapping vigorously.
I have my people on off. I have them right here on a button.
Tucker, we're always happy to talk to you. We're sad that you're not here with us in studio, but if this is the best we could do, we're very, very happy about this. The production, and I think most people that aren't old enough to remember the Alabama church bombings, a lot of them may be familiar with it through Spike Lee's phenomenal documentary, 4 Little Girls, and also the song that I think it was a Joan Baez song, Birmingham Sunday, I think was the name of the song.
God,
if I'm remembering that correctly, I believe it was honored in song too. But for our listeners, Tucker, can you give us just a synopsis of the tale that you're telling there over in this production?
Well, first of all, I want to. I'm still pondering the reason why a tiny hug from Jesus is not a bigger rush for Michael. Michael, you better learn to take what you can get.
I thank you, sir. Yes, I have learned my lesson,
Tucker. That's a whole nother show. We only have an hour.
All right. The year of 1963, in which the events that this play is based upon took place, was a tumultuous year. The 60s were an amazing decade. But in just that year, George Wallace was elected governor of Alabama. JFK gave his Berlin speech, Ich bin ein Berliner. Medgar Evers on the 12th of June was assassinated. Martin Luther King gave his speech, I Have a Dream. We know that JFK was assassinated 3 weeks later, mm-hmm. after the events of this play, as was Lee Harvey Oswald the next day. Buddhist monks were beginning to set themselves on fire in Vietnam. The Diem regime fell through a coup that Lee assisted. In August, James Meredith became the first graduate, the first black graduate of the University of Mississippi. Sam Cooke was arrested and wrote, "A change is going to come." It was an amazing year.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
And
this is
the Birmingham bombing killed 4 young girls in Sunday school and wounded 22 more. It is now 24 years later in Birmingham, and these are 7 men who have become accomplished. They are friends. They have been involved socially, politically, economically. And this is a rather elite club, like a Yale club or a Harvard club. These are the movers and shakers of Birmingham, the African-American movers and shakers. And we interact, and in that process, it is revealed who we have become what we've been persuaded by, seduced by, motivated by. And it's a rather compelling piece of theater. My character, who is the editor of the paper, says to a young aspirant who wants to join the club, I was lucky. I grew up in segregation with the law. And in point of fact, Tucker Smallwood grew up when segregation was the law. So I know whereof I speak. I sat in. I protested. I watched the events. Now, in 1963, I happened to have been in Germany going to college. And so some of these events are history to me as opposed to lived through by me. Just as in 1969, I was in Vietnam, and events like Stonewall and the walking on the moon and Woodstock and any other events are history to me as opposed to events I lived through. Do you understand the distinction?
Yeah, yes. Understood. Right, right. Tucker, your dad knew Robert Kennedy, didn't he?
My dad knew Ted Kennedy. My father was the director of the German-American Institute in Frankfurt, and... Wow. At the time, Senator Kennedy made a visit to Germany, and my dad took him through the city and through our diplomatic areas.
I see.
And was photographed, one of my favorite photographs of my father.
Yes, I'm sorry. I don't mean to take you off track with that. It just occurred to me that I thought I remembered seeing that photo myself.
Yes.
It sounds to me, Tucker, with your description of this, it's a much more personal look at this historic event through these people than like a history lesson. It sounds as though you really get a great feel for the men who experienced it. Do you know if any of these sort of, you know, fraternities existed? Is it based on is it just sort of in the playwright's mind and imagination of that?
Fraternity is a word that implies the Greek relationship of fraternities and sororities. Fraternity, in this sense, is used as a group of like-minded men. Mm-hmm. They are a fraternity of business interests, and they have formed a club where they may meet in private and, as they say, let their hair down, be real, argue, celebrate, plan, etc. But the fraternity, as we use it, meaning a Greek organization, is not relevant here.
Right.
But there have always been groups in different cities of black businessmen, black political leaders, who would form clubs and come together and interact socially.
I want to share a couple of these review quotes here because they are quite impressive. This is from the Los Angeles Times talking about the production, a fascinating play that has an almost spooky timelessness. Stetson, the playwright, displays keen wit and a real flair for biting, frequently hilarious dialogue. Fraternity brings complex characters to life. That's from the LA Times. And from Variety, mm-hmm. Fraternity is a timely, significant achievement which commands the attention of anyone interested in seeing politics brought alive on a live stage. Mm-hmm. Stetson's talent for pithy insights gets a fine showcase here. That's from Variety. Interesting to see that there's a lot of humor in this, Tucker. Is it that actually surprises me, given the subject matter. It's a funny play as well, huh?
I think that's fundamental to good writing. I think whenever you engage something that is profoundly serious and impactful and horrific, the opportunity to give the audience a chance to release and through a laugh allows them to stay with the piece. Telling history from a standpoint of someone personal as opposed to an abstraction of data is always more effective. We can identify one-on-one with a character or a group of characters. Just as Ken Burns has shown so effectively in his documentaries, if we can get a single human being or a small group that we can identify with and relate to, then we're able to follow the story much better.
I want to let people know... actually, Michael, why don't you let people
Absolutely.
Know...
Absolutely. What we're talking about, ladies and gentlemen, of course, is Fraternity, and we're going to say this again later in the program, but tickets for Fraternity can be received gotten very easily. You simply visit their website, ebonyrep.org. It's playing at the Nate Holden Performing Arts Center, and that is located at 4718 West Washington Boulevard, Los Angeles, downtown, and the box office is 323-964-9766. and this is conveniently located one block east of the theater. Complimentary parking is what I'm referring
two,
to there.
There's two parking lots.
Is there? Yes, fantastic. Yes. And it's available at one of the two lots there, as Paul just said, located on the corner of Washington and Vineyard.
And I always like to point that out. I'm sorry to interrupt you, Tucker, but getting people out to the theater in Los Angeles is so difficult, as we know. I always like to let them know, boy, if it's in near the downtown area and there's two parking lots available, that's a huge part of getting out there.
It's worth the trip. I go on the subway to downtown. I love it.
Tucker. Yes, no, as have I. Tucker?
Yes.
I wanted to ask you, I'm going to need your help with some of these pronunciations, but I do want to call out some of your cast members because they have these, they are very accomplished performers. I'm going to start with Oba Babatunde. Is that correct?
Oba Babatunde, a celebrated actor. So many will know him from Dreamgirls and other fine stage productions.
And from
he's a marvelous actor, and he's brilliant in this play.
Also, Silence of the Lambs, if I remember correctly. Yes?
Yes. Many, many films.
And we have Harvey Blanks, a Drama Desk Award winner. Rocky Carroll from NCIS. Nasir Nadjeb. Do I have that correct? I tell you, I'm doing pretty good.
You are nailing it.
Roger Robinson. I knew that wouldn't throw me. He's a Tony Award winner. Of course, Tucker. And William Allen Young is all, from Moesha.
Moesha.
We went out the night after our opening production to a place called The Serving Spoon in Inglewood. Stays open very late on weekends. Had a great time. And, of course, the patrons were running up and wanting pictures immediately with William because they recognize him from Moesha. And Rocky from NCIS, and others of us somewhat less so, but I've gathered my glory around the world, so I wasn't taken aback when Miss Thing from San Francisco wasn't that eager to take my picture.
Oh, I love that.
Well,
love
actually, that it's funny. I know Tucker not only through his great work from The Rogue, but also that Tucker and I live in the same condo.
I was going to say, your neighbors
as well.
Yeah.
A great story happened because Tucker did an episode, an arc of episodes for the Sarah Silverman program where he played God. And my friend Kevin was visiting me from Chicago, and Tucker was just in the lobby getting his mail. It's like, hi, Tucker. And, you know, he left, and my friend Kevin just turned to me, and he said, was that God? And I said, yes, it was. He goes, man, L.A. is a weird place.
God's in the lobby?
God's in the lobby, yes.
He's everywhere.
God is everywhere.
There you are.
Bear in mind, there are only 8 more performances. There's a Friday night at 8, 2 shows on Saturday at 2 and 8 o'clock, and a matinee on Sunday at 3. This weekend and the next weekend are the last performances.
Okay, good to know, good to know. So 8 more shows, and once again, for tickets for Fraternity, I know Tucker's on a tight schedule today because he has another engagement a little later, so we're going to let him go. But it's ebonyrep.org is the website, ebonyrep.org. This is Fraternity playing at the Nate Holden Performing Arts Center. That's 4718 West Washington Boulevard in Los Angeles. To call the box office, 323-964-9766. 2 parking lots are complimentary parking, 1 block east of the theater. And as Tucker just mentioned, only 8 performances left of Fraternity. Do not miss this one. Killer reviews, a great cast, and always a pleasure having you on, Tucker.
It's my pleasure, Paul and Michael. Thanks very much for allowing me to speak with your members. This is a beautiful theater. I've worked all over Los Angeles, and this is easily one of the most beautiful theaters I've had the privilege of working in.
I hope
some of your listeners will come down and see this work.
I saw the venue on the website. I went to ebonyrep.org, and I looked at the pictures, and it's stunning. It looks like this little mini Disney concert hall there.
See, it's just one of the things that Angelenos need to discover. You know, most people, you know, perhaps don't know that beautiful theater is sitting down.
Yeah.
There. So one more reason to go out and see great theater with a great cast, a great story. Yeah. At affordable prices.
Yes, very much so. Great. Thank you
so much,
Tucker.
Thank you, Tucker.
Great having you on.
Thank you all.
All right.
Be well.
We'll talk to you soon. Bye now.
I'll never forget going to Birmingham. Montgomery. Was it Montgomery or Birmingham?
I believe it was Birmingham. Yeah, Birmingham. Yeah.
I've toured Birmingham. There's also the Martin Luther King Memorial in Montgomery as well, where Alabama Shakes is. And I was so moved by all the murals, the sculpture, the story of it. I'll never forget.
There's an astounding song by Loudon Wainwright called Hank and Fred, and he was in Montgomery, Alabama, and on NPR he heard that Fred Rogers had died, Mr. Rogers, oh, Mr. Yeah. Rogers' neighborhood. And it affected him so primally, because it was such a part of his childhood and his and all that, that he went to Hank Williams' grave, because that was sort of the closest. And he stood at Hank Williams' grave, and he mourned Fred Rogers. Oh, and it was just about sort of how everything sort of came together. And it's the most unusual, quirky song. But for listeners, it's called Hank and Fred. It's by Loudon Wainwright III. Very unusual, but it's just sort of about how when, and this is something we'll talk about when we get to our arts calendar today, it's sort of when grief hits us. You know, places like that, places like Birmingham and Montgomery, the what has happened there changes the air.
It changes the air.
Yeah, it's like walking, when you're, it's the way I feel when I visit my sister. My sister lives in Sandy Hook, Connecticut. And it's the way I feel when I go there. It's the way I feel when I go to Lower Manhattan. Mm-hmm. And you just experience that. It's not that it's not that the place is ruined. It's not destroyed. But when so much happens, so much volatile stuff happens there, it changes the air. The ghosts are there. A great, great movie that addresses this, the murder of the civil rights workers, Ghosts of Mississippi, perfect example of that. Great movie with Gene Hackman and Willem Dafoe.
Yeah.
Great. I'm definitely going to check this
you
one
should.
Out.
You should. I mean, this sounds fantastic. Yeah. And the cast, my God, those names in that cast, right?
No.
You know, I had the pleasure of meeting Coretta King.
Oh, did you?
Yes, and spending some time with her, actually. I was on tour handling the business of the Bee Gees, touring the country, and they made a substantial donation to Martin Luther King Foundation. And she accepted, this was at a luncheon, very private luncheon, I might add, and she accepted the check and, spent some time with us, some quality time in talking about everything. I mean, her husband and them and whatnot. It was very interesting.
Wow.
Well, that's a lot of people I meet on the road like that, but she in particular was fascinating.
Oh my God. It's
Well, I mean, sure.
Legendary.
Michael's met some. I mean, yeah, Mike. I mean, that's meeting history. That's
completely
meeting history.
Exactly.
And if we have time at the end of this, Michael, you have to share you've obviously met a lot of people in your career, but meeting the Beatles was a big one. Yeah. We'll get to that.
What? The Beatles? You met the Beatles?
One more time, we'll throw this out there. EbonyRep.org is the website for the show. We'll put the full information about the tickets before we sign off. But we're going to do our arts calendar would normally be before we talk with Joshua. Michael, I would like you to address us this week, if you don't mind.
Yes, thank you, Paul. As Paul just said, normally we would be sharing our arts calendar at this point, but we'd like to take a moment to recognize a very important person to both Paul and myself, and a giant figure for the arts in Los Angeles, whom we lost just yesterday, or on Monday of this week, I should say. In recognition of who I'm speaking about, ladies and gentlemen, his name is Lee Melville. And this is something that I personally wrote to his contingency last night when I was made aware of his passing. This is what I simply said. Paul was kind enough to include it in our show today. One of the truly great champions of Los Angeles theater, always the gentleman and consummate professional. Thank you, Lee. Thank you for so many lovely memories and so many kind words over the year. You will never be forgotten. You will forever live on in the hearts of all of us who had the pleasure of knowing you. Good night, sir.
Gentleman is exactly such a great guy.
And he certainly touched your life, Paul.
Oh, very much so. Yeah. You know, it's interesting because when he was with L.A. Stage Alliance for years, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, yeah.
And, one of the things when you do, I have a theater company, Seaglass Theater, and we're one of the, equity waiver theaters in town. And we're only 5 years old, but we've had some good success, so we're grateful. But getting people out to the theater, as I mentioned to Tucker in LA, is one of God's great mysteries. And these guys, they're called on to do so many things. And Lee Melville, with all of the theaters that he was pulled to, being with LA Stage Alliance and the request to get him, every production he was there. And he was there and sought me out, and we talked. And those are the heroes of this community here. It's easy to go to the Amundsen on press night and do the cocktail thing afterwards. And it's easy to go to the Mark Taper, and it's easy to go to, you know, the Kirk Douglas and all this.
Right.
But when you're at the Victory Theater Center in Burbank and you've got a bar next door with a waitress with fresh stitches in her head, you know, that's what I'm talking about.
Again, how vivid.
This is, that's what I'm talking about. You know, that's the people that just get out there and do their...
Such a support.
Do their
thing.
And he amazing. Was a gentleman and will be sorely...
A mensch. He was a real mensch.
Yes. Mensch,
you know?
Yes. You just hit it
he
right.
He will be sorely missed, that's for sure.
Yes. Well, I think, personally, I think it's time to lighten the mood.
Yeah, let's do that.
We're talking about the loss of a friend. We're talking about the bombing of a church in Alabama. Officially going to switch the direction here for the second half of our broadcast today. Our next guest has put his own twist on the historical and hysterical A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum. This newly imagined production preserves the classic show's structure, music, and book while creating an interesting new framing device. Tapping into the show's famous opening number, Comedy Tonight, the director has crafted a show-within-a-show concept where a 1966 theater troupe is putting on the show on the first day the Uniform Time Act, which made daylight savings time a national law, has taken effect. Hello, is this thing on?
Yeah.
Some cast members have forgotten to move their clocks forward. A bit of confusion and chaos ensues, and overseeing all of this chaos, which opens June 1st at the Hillcrest Center for the Arts in Thousand Oaks, is acclaimed actor, director, and a true gentleman himself, Mr. Joshua Finkel.
Hello. Oh, my people. Thank you, and
there you go. He's always directing this one. He's always directing this guy. Did you see
the first person that's come in and done
and
that?
And I tell you, I
love it. It's such a great bit.
I wish we had a camera in here, because he even did like the closed fist
closure.
Yes. And scene.
And scene, yes. Oh, okay, Josh, I got to ask you.
Yeah.
A funny thing that happened on the way to the forum is funny. I mean, I would say this. It's funny enough.
It's
one of the strongest. I mean, and I'm a huge fan of it, because when I was in Chicago with my friend Ron Orbach, did a production of Laughter on the 23rd Floor.
Right, of course.
And I played Kenny, who was modeled after Larry Gelbart, who is one of the authors of Forum.
Yeah, Forum.
So I feel this sort of special affection for it. But when did this idea occur to you to take this famous, iconic thing and sort of add this little twist to it?
Well, you know, being in the business, I'm a huge fan of projects that have that topic, like Noises Off or Bullets Over Broadway or Waiting for Guffman, where you're present for your consideration, present to the dynamics within the show business, people themselves.
Right.
And I just always find that really fascinating and funny and true and resonant. And then I thought, you know, with this particular production, I thought, not necessarily ever knowing in the casting process who's going to walk in the door, and that's really who you have to choose from, you know. It provided a looseness and an openness to it depending upon who showed up, and I really kind of grabbed the reins with that. And I also, I'd seen fantastic productions of it, and then I'd seen less than fantastic productions of it. And I came to really realize in kind of researching it a bit that this is not at all an actor-proof show at all.
Mm-hmm.
So it can be, you know, like comedy, you know, dying is easy, comedy is hard. You have to hit it, or it's like, it's too melodramatic, or it's too heavy, or it's too something. So I said, how can I kind of craft a safety zone to buffer both things and include one of my favorite topics, which is the show within a show idea? And I said, it's really present in that opening number. It's designed to say you're meeting the acting company, and then they submerge into the show like a prologus, you know, Shakespearean prologue. They go into the show. It little bits of that resurface throughout, a little bit from Suitless, mainly as a kind of a Jack Benny, you know, aside commenter.
Right.
And then it really presences itself at intermission, the top of Act 2, and then at the closer. And the rest of the time, the design is just the characters interacting. But then I thought, what would happen if we never lost sight of the dynamic of this particular acting troupe, and also throw it, you know, you always ask in farce, how can I make this harder to increase the stakes and make the farce authentic and these you know, crazy things that happen with timing and you know, insanity, be truthful given what's happening? And I said, well, what would happen if not everybody was on the same page with the time change? You know, I thought, you know, that first day is always like, oh, I overslept. I set my alarm. I said, well, let's go. When would it be really new for us? And I started doing some research, and I found out about the Uniform Time Act. And so my show is set on Sunday, April 24th, 1966. Really, general, at 9:40. And you know, it's a thing where that was the first day that all of America lined up from Johnson's, you know, sort of declaration that daylight savings time is annual. It's not just during wartime. It's on and off and occasional. It was going to be twice a year, and that was the first day we sprung forward and did it. Mm-hmm. So my conceit is that the audience got that memo, and some of the actors did, but not all of them. Right. And because it's 66,
which is probably how it was.
And because it's 66, you know, there's no cell phones. There's no way to just like text them and get them over here. And also who this troupe is, they are called Traveling the Broadway Classical Tent Troupe. So they're kind of a B-team ramshackle group of touring classical actors that pitch a theater tent. Remember theater tents? Like, you know, So theater tent in a parking lot, do one of their sort of avant-garde, mid-60s versions of classical plays, and keeping with the kind of revolutionary living theater, Grotowski, new theater movement on classical works. Their sort of ideology is that if I take a classic play but sort of morph it through a new message, that classic playwright's message will become clearer to the modern audiences. They think that's really kicking, but not all the critics or the audiences think that's kicking. So, I mean, so there's all this great conceit of who these people are and how they got into this weird one-nighter traveling tent troupe. So they're exhausted. They you know, they pitch the tent, they throw out the laundry drying from last night, hang it out, do whatever, a show and rep one of their plays. And I had a great time making up posters. When you come into the theater in the lobby, the whole thing is the theater tent, and you'll see mounted the company members, like who they are, their bios as company members of the tent troupe.
Oh, gotcha.
And production photos of past seasons.
Of past productions.
Things like the anti-maiming of the shrew, can a New York socialite, you know, a battle axe actually be transformed into a New York socialite, the importance of weaning Ernest, you know, can a young man ever get over being born in a handbag, you know, and then just all the what the critics said about it, and these production photos that were just, from my memory, you know, those kind of summer stocky, like half bad, someone's half looking at the camera, like room kind of bad photo.
Yeah.
So they just hit the mark. I was like, this is it, you know? Yeah. And it allows that template for that kind of play. And then with the casting process, I was like, there were some demographics of roles. Hundreds of people came in for that.
Mm.
Like, I have a million of those people to choose from, and not one of this slot.
Right.
So I said, why don't we just keep going out of the box and keep using, like, what if those folks aren't here, the time change, and now it's like the ASM is on, or my favorite thing so far with that is the Proteans, who are normally three tumbling tenor guys, you know, and my first Proteans, the pseudolist cover runner-up, you know, and then I had no one else to choose from. So I chose two of my women that were going to be up for different roles, and I said, you're going to be his mother, you're going to be his sister, you're here to support him from Tennessee. They come up with these great characters, that they're there to see him out of college in his first show, but then the other two guys aren't there. So he ropes in his mother and sister from Tennessee, who have never seen the show, are not in show business, and they're the other two Proteans.
And they're the
So what happens in the context of the text is that everything that's normally done sort of presentationally and kind of like a, you know, razzmatazzy, here comes this kind of number and sort of set, you know, it's really spontaneously, the lyrics are spontaneously coined by what's happening right in front of them right now.
Mm-hmm.
That's unexpected.
Yeah.
And so it's always this double level going on.
It does sound very, I want to say Guffman-esque. It doesn't sound like, but it sounds like there's that sort of flavor of Fly by the Seat of the Pants.
Oh.
But the other thing, too, is that, and I can certainly appreciate this, and you too, Michael, I'm sure, but it's one of these things where you've given the performers just meatball stuff, because they get to play two characters.
Yes,
they get to play two characters. You get to not only do, you know, Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum, but you get to play the actor playing the role in Funny Thing Happened.
Or like, yes, and now I'm interacting with your mother, who doesn't really know what to, you know, she's reading like notes on her hand and, you know, mm-hmm. all those kind of interesting timing things that are being uncovered and getting more and more delicious just because we keep exploring the given circumstances. My client, Paul Panico, and his business partner, Robert Wybazal, created Panic Productions. It's their second season. And he's just a great guy. And I have many clients of mine who've gone through my A&T Performers Workshop or studied with me privately, came across the table in the show. So I have like six or seven clients in it, which is a blast to kind of all get to work together beyond a little, you know, let's get this audition up or let's get this thing up. We all get to like be in the room together. And my team, my choreographer, Mona King, she's fantastic. She's also a client. I've built shows with her. Paul's a client. So we're all kind of on the same horse, you know, and it's really a blast. And the company is just fantastic.
What did you do for content in terms of the script? I mean, is it just, did you just write additional material? Did you have improvisations with people? How did that work?
We did some improv, but what I did is I've created a atmospheric pre-show prior to the overture. So that's when you kind of, you know, as the audience is coming in, like one of our courtesans, who, you know, is normally Betty Ann, who's the box office girl, the front flap girl, because there's no box office. You're the front flap.
The front flap girl. Oh, that's
funny. So, you know, yeah. So that kind of like
I was the front flap girl until a little penicillin cleared it right up. But
oh, dear. How vivid. Number three, and it always comes in three. So thank you for the third one.
All right.
You know, so that kind of interplay has just been such a blast to keep building out on. And the fourth, like, just keep stoking the fire. What else is in the burner is I said, what if the Edge of Night casting people were here? So more of our, like, seasoned people, like the people who play John Gaston and Lisa Gaston, his wife, who play Miles and also play Domina. Mm-hmm. They're a couple in real life, and I'm having them be a couple. But they're just also, you know, get me the heck out of this tent thing, this one-nighter tent crappy tour, right? And when they bring in the news that the Edge of Night people did come. So that gives you an extra Bunsen burner push toward his overdone, you know, funeral wailing thing. It's also Brock, the actor, trying to get that next series regular on the soap. Right. So Suitless is, you know, the double entendre that's just given in the lines. I think we've suffered enough has to be just as he's just flooring it, overacting Medea bad. Right. Yeah. As just, you know, you could just do that kind of Bob Hope take out and just say that line. Like, I think, you know, I think we, meaning the audience, we all have, like, please tone it down.
Right.
This sucks, you know.
Showboating.
So, yeah, it just, it has this other level. It's the same thing, but it has a great overlay. And I'm peeing in my pants because, you know, it's not a thing where you'll compare it against other productions that are always sort of a same template.
Right.
And it also has a freedom to not be too heavy-handed. You have that freedom to kind of bob and weave around it. And it's just incredible. It's a great, great group of people. And we're just howling. We're going into tech this weekend. And we're putting together, like, how do you get the 60s headband off and you get the toga on? And how do you get that, you know, crossover? And so all that stuff. So it's I bring a suitcase full of toys that are, you know, like rubber chickens. Rubber chickens are in the show. As a standard, you know,
what a surprise!
Yeah, exactly, right. And
well, that sounds like a bit much.
Well, but here's my justification of it is that they were still out from the show the night before, which was Macbeth, Fair is Foul and Foul is Fair, and so that company would have. Oh, I know. It goes deep.
I'm
it goes really.
So
the follow through goes deep.
This is right up your alley, Mr. Paul Strohle.
Oh, my goodness. It's wacky.
You look like, what were you going to say, Michael? You were just...
I said this is right up your alley.
Oh, no. I'm sorry. I thought you were going to say something.
I was just, I'm looking at Joshua speaking so beautifully about what he's doing, and he's so articulate.
Oh, thank you.
If only everyone, you know, if you've not even seen the show before, you're kind of getting an idea, you know, of what this is all about. Plus, he has the best teeth ever.
Oh, thank you, Dad. Thank you, Dad. It's my dad's teeth. Thank you.
Beautiful.
Really blessed. I'm really blessed. But thank you, Dad.
And you remind me, and you know what? They're good teeth, and they're real teeth. Because I'm so tired of the L.A. teeth, the Dallas Raines teeth.
Oh, don't you go to Dallas.
What?
He's a nice man.
He's a nice guy, but he looks like he's choking on marshmallows. I mean, the guy's teeth.
It's the tanning thing.
I know.
How can I work that into the show? Wait a minute. How can I work that
into the show? He's an Oompa Loompa who's choking on marshmallows.
He's one of the best. Dallas, if you're listening, don't pay any attention.
Looks like a Tyrannosaurus Rex bobblehead. I'm telling you.
Oh, my goodness.
No, I mean, he's a very attractive man. He's a good good. He's a weatherman. He's a good-looking guy. But the teeth are just like nuclear bright. It's like Barney teeth, you know, like piano keys.
It's like blacklight teeth.
Yeah, he's like
disco
Ross,
teeth.
Like
disco
Ross
teeth.
In that
disco
episode
teeth.
Of Teeth. Disco teeth. Anyway,
I want to say you also remind me. Has anybody ever said this to you? I thought he was actually wonderful at what he did. Robert Q. Lewis. You look like Robert Q. Lewis. You remember?
I don't know who that is at all.
He was a television personality, a game show host for many, many years. Very popular, huge game show host.
He was an
actor and did Broadway and all those things.
And that's interesting because he reminds me of Robert Louis Stevenson, who wrote Treasure Island. So, well.
Sorry.
Oh, this is a tough room.
Speaking of Vegas.
Hello. We're in a tumbleweed rolled
through. Are we in Oklahoma? Take cover.
Okay.
We got Treasure Island in Vegas.
Okay, a funny thing happened on the way to the forum. We're certainly not done with Joshua, but I want to throw this information out there. Funny thing happened on the way to the forum. Open Saturday, June 1st at 8 p.m. And continue. And of course, don't turn your clocks back because it's not actually
Don't miss it. Don't get screwed up.
Saturday, June 1st, 8 p.m. Continues Fridays and Saturdays at 8, Sundays at 2 through June 16th with a special Thursday night performance at 8 p.m. on June 6th. Tickets are $20.
Yeah, and 18 for students and seniors. And there's a big parking lot. You can park and everything.
And are available at that's at hillcrestarts.com. That's Hillcrest, like the toothpaste, arts.com.
Speaking of marshmallow teeth.
Or you can call 805. Well, Crest is sponsoring this, isn't that
right?
There
we are. Thank you. Done.
Call 805-381-1246. That's 805-381-1246. And this is at the Hillcrest Center for the Arts. And that is 403 West Hillcrest Drive in beautiful Thousand Oaks.
Right across from the Oaks Mall. So you can have a lovely dinner, go shopping, go across the street, and come to the show.
You know, I love it out there.
It's great.
Thousand Oaks. Pretty. Place.
I went to Mastro's Steakhouse out there.
You know, Mastro's? Is that the one across from the Four Seasons?
They, you know, it's interesting. They have one in Beverly Hills, and they have one in Thousand Oaks. And interesting, when I drove up to it, because I took Monica there for her birthday, it's like right next to a Jiffy Lube. And I was like, you know, it's just on this little stretch, and it was just... And then you go inside, and it's just one of the most beautiful restaurants you've ever seen. It's just really odd that it just where it's because like Jiffy Lube and Mastro's and like this
dry cleaner,
yeah. But then you know it's just spectacular. But I love it out there. It's very.
Is that the one though? That's
and it's
across
easy for me to get because I'm
Four Seasons.
What's that?
Is it across the street from the Four Seasons Hotel?
I didn't notice the Four Seasons.
Well, you would have. So
I
apparently,
would. I don't think it is. Yeah.
Jiffy Lube, Four Seasons, 7-Eleven, dry cleaner.
Something's wrong.
My father is a laborer. I'm an Italian. I'm Italian descent. I'll notice a Jiffy Lube before I notice the Four Seasons. That will pop out a little more to me.
You know, another thing about Joshua. I'm holding a, ladies and gentlemen, in
aside
small
from his teeth?
Font.
Holding my
teeth. 5 pages of his credits as a director and an actor.
5 pages. I got the leather bound edition.
Oh,
I got the.
yes.
Well, now how much would you pay? But wait, there's more.
Yeah. Before you answer.
Wow.
No, serious. You could. I mean, you have done a ton of work, Joshua. Really. I didn't even attempt to. When I put together our little collateral here, Michael, I didn't even attempt to consolidate this into an on air read because it was just too much material.
Oh, sorry. So you're saying shorten it down, like brevity.
No.
I didn't
want to
say anything.
No, God.
It's,
I get my car. It's weighing me down. Like the back of my trunk's dipping from that book in the back.
Well, I knew more about you as a performer on Broadway and in national tours than I did about your directing life. So kudos to you, sir.
But did you notice also under special skills, flossing?
Oh.
Right there, under special skills.
Yes.
Again,
no hands.
Thanks, Dad.
No hands. Just marshmallows.
Joshua, we got a little bit of time left. We got about 7 minutes left, but I'm starting this early because I know, given this history that you have as a performer, and that Michael just pointed out, you will have a couple of these. We always like to ask people, some of our more accomplished performers, about things, disasters that have happened while they've performed, accidents that have happened on stage, usually of a funny nature. On-stage catastrophes, whether directing or performing, I should have alerted you to this before.
No, that's fine. No, I have two. I have two certainly on the front burner now.
Okay.
One was I don't know if it was Raleigh or maybe it was one of the Alabama towns. I mean, it was Raleigh, North Carolina. I was on the tour of Les Mis, And we were all going, you know, right before Bring Him Home, all everyone kind of goes to sleep in the barricade, and then Valjean comes forward and goes, God, oh, no. Right, so. And they, either from the radio frequency interference or the sound person flipped the wrong mic, but you just heard, you know, Peter Samuel backstage or Gervais saying, yeah, well, that was a really good one. Just, you know, like, dun, dun, dun. Oh, that was a really good one. God. It was just like. yeah, it's just strange. And I have had certainly.
Bring him home. Oh, that was a really good one.
Yeah, pair of jacks. Yeah. Like, oh, God. and then I remember being with Spider-Woman before New York. We were doing it in London, and I think it was in previews, and we were still trying to work out the mechanics of all the scenery moving and the track work. I just remember the jail cell kind of panels that Jerome Serlin, you know, brilliantly designed that came in, and it got one thing got like stuck on a track on the bottom, but it kept moving along the top, and it was one of the things like, and the scene's moving, and it's tilting, and it's going to snap and fall on Tita Rivera or Michael McCormick. We're like, and it just, get out of the way! It was just crazy.
Did it, what did it write itself?
No, no. It was like, and stop, okay. And curtain, and we'll be right back, you know.
Okay. But this was during your performance.
Right, during the and I was on, in the original L.A. company at the Schubert Theater, I was on as Thénardier, the master of the house, having my wedding wig put on, getting into that scene during... Empty Chairs and Empty Tables. Rhys Holland was singing it on stage, and we had, and I was, you know, I'm talking to Michael Moore. We're getting our wig put on, and the mirror starts to like vibrate and pulse toward my face, and we were having an earthquake. We're underneath the basement. It was like, what is the? Okay, it's an earthquake, and it was lasted probably for about 30 seconds, and it just kept
which is an eternity.
It's forever. Yeah, yeah. It was forever, and it kept getting worse and worse and worse and worse. Like the mirror was looked like it was going to burst toward my face. We just, you know, ran under the doorway. We're like, oh my God, it's bad. And Rhys and the orchestra did not stop. Like, he just gripped that table in his shawl and his thing. He's like, you know, just keep singing. And the orchestra kept playing. It was like the Titanic, you know?
Yeah.
The guys in the back who were the ghosts, like, just split. They're just watching the lights swing, and they're like, get the heck out of here, you know? And then Kay Cole, who was Madam T, just said, Josh, just so you know, if there's an aftershock when we're on together, she goes, I'm out of there. And I was like, well, I'm on, and I'm staying. I think it is Gloria Swanson that had that theater fall down around me, and I will sing that last note. Are you kidding? That's right.
The Buster Keaton thing where the front of the building
exactly,
falls
right over the window. Exactly. You know? Yes. Exactly. Yes. You know.
Oh, my God.
That's scary. That would be very scary.
Very. It's very scary, but yeah. Then it was like, and the people who did stay in their seats and didn't go screaming up the aisles, like, it was just mayhem, right? And he got the most enormous applause because everyone's kind of weathered that 30-second storm together. Like, don't leave, hang. They're still going. We're still going. And then there was no aftershock. But it was unforgettable.
And
it was unforgettable.
Everyone felt it. It's all there. And then just the collective, not only applause for him being such a pro, but also the collective release of, okay, we're all okay.
We all made it. Like, that was crazy. Yeah, it was wild. It was wild.
Were you here for Northridge, Michael?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah, I was.
Did you sustain any damage where you lived?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah. My home was right in Sherman Oaks on Greenleaf, if you know that street, mm-hmm. So it's right in the heart of
that region. Was right in the
just north of Ventura Boulevard, south of Ventura Boulevard, a couple of blocks, and yeah, it was scary. Mm-hmm. I mean, because everything, the first thing happens so late in the middle of the night, and you start hearing anything that's breakable is breaking, and the dishes flying out of the cabinets and the glass, and the kitchen was just covered with glass, and you know, not knowing what it was, and coming out of a dead sleep like that, and I also had a dog to be concerned with. And
did he or she warn you early? Did he? That
no.
Dog. Oh, really?
No, because
wow.
We were sleeping. So the dog, however, who was a beagle, her name Maggie, she went to the one place in the house that she hated to go for her own self-protection.
The tub?
And it was the shower.
Wow.
The door of the shower opens. Yeah, and that's open. I would give her a bath. And at that stage, she didn't like to go in and have it done. So I would give her a bath in the shower. Wow. And she just hated to get her in there. It took 10 minutes on the slowest walk to doom
her. Right. The Green Mile.
Exactly. Yeah. If I'm going, I'm going in the shower.
Yeah. So I freaked out because I couldn't find her in the house anywhere. And I thought, what the hell? And I just, by happenstance, walked into the bathroom, and the door was still open, and there she was sitting there, just looking at me.
We're friends. I think you know, Michael, Monica and I are friends with Virginia Madsen, actress Virginia Madsen.
Yes, lovely lady.
And we've met Michael just briefly once, her brother Michael. And he lived in Van Nuys at the time. He had a home, and he had a little coach house behind it, and there was a pool in between. And he said he was sleeping in the bedroom. He heard a rumble. He felt something. He sat up in bed, and the water from the pool in one roll, all of the water had been thrown out of the pool and into the back of his house. The water came up in seconds. The water was up past his bed, and he looked out the window to be looking at an empty pool. Just the roll of the earth just dumped
whipped
all
it up
the
like
water.
A tidal wave.
Ours did something similar, but not that drastic. It didn't make it into the house, but it was scary.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Unbelievable. We are out of time.
Yes, we are.
What a joy
this has been
having
a blast.
You on. I'm going to throw this information out here real quick for people. For a funny thing happened on the way to the forum. You want to call 805-381-1246 or visit hillcrestarts.com. And Michael, you got the info
yes,
for fraternity?
Yes, I do.
There?
Fraternity at the Nate Holden Performing Arts Center. And the box office is 323-964-9766.
Or ebonyrep.org.
That's correct. Don't miss it. Get yourselves to the theater, ladies
come
and gentlemen.
Come see us. It's wacky. It's fun.
And thanks. He's not online anymore, but thanks to Tucker Smallwood for joining
us
the first portion of the show. And Michael, as always, I'll see you next week.
Thank you, Paul. See you on the radio.
Hi, Mom. Hi, Schmunkle.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.